Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So if I asked you to name the big systems humans have used to understand the world, you'd probably say, what? Science and religion.
Right, those are the two big ones.
But what if I told you there's a third major system? And it isn't some historical relic, but a powerful force that's actually still with us today.
We are talking about magic.
Exactly.
And just to be clear, we are not talking about stage magic or, you know, fictional wizards.
No, not at all.
Today, we're doing a really fascinating and I think profound deep dive into magic as a universal, complex system of human belief.
And we're basing this entire conversation on Owen Davies' fantastic book, Magic, A Very Short Introduction.
Our whole mission here is to move past that simple idea that magic is just primitive superstition and science eventually won.
Right. It's not that linear. We want to understand the really critical role it's played in, well, in everything. Structuring societies, political control.
And even in defining what we now consider to be rational knowledge, it's a huge intellectual reframing.
And it really matters to you, the listener, because Davies challenges this whole notion that our world is disenchanted. Because even in our, hyper-rational digital age, the core human needs that magic once served,
The need for meaning, the desire for control over chaos.
that they're still here. They've just been channeled into other things like algorithms, self-help books, even those viral superstitions you see online.
So, understanding magic's history is really about understanding ourselves right now.
So who is our guide on this journey? The author is Owen Davies. He's a very distinguished professor of social history at the University of Hertfordshire.
And Davies has dedicated his entire academic life to this intersection of social history and belief. I mean, this is someone who has written definitive works like Witchcraft, Magic, and Culture and Grimoires, a history of magic books.
He is an absolute expert.
He really is. In folk traditions, supernatural beliefs, and especially how they function in a society.
And that's what makes his perspective so valuable for our deep dive. He's a social historian first.
Exactly. He's not interested in proving if a spell works or not.
No?
He approaches it with this rigorous scholarly objectivity. He wants to know about the function of magic.
Why did people believe it worked?
Yeah.
How did that belief structure their lives, their communities? What purpose did it serve?
It's an exercise in historical empathy, not judgment.
And crucially, he uses a global cross-cultural approach. He avoids that narrow Western-centric view that's just about, European witches.
Right. He shows how these patterns of magical thinking can pop up everywhere, universally. It's not localized. It's fundamentally human.
So let's get to the central premise of the book, because this is really the foundation of his entire argument.
Okay.
Davies argues that magic is not the crude precursor to science, and it's not the opposite of religion.
In reality, it has always coexisted and profoundly interacted with both of them all through history.
It's not some neat linear progression, magic, then religion, then science.
No, it's messy. It's a fluid relationship, and his core thesis revolves around what he calls the discursive category of magic.
And this is so vital to understand.
Absolutely. What he means is that magic is best understood as a label. It's a social construct.
And that label is almost always applied, well, pejoratively, right, by outsiders.
Yes, by institutions in power. They use it to label practices and beliefs that fall outside what they consider legitimate.
So if the established priest performs a public ceremony to bless the harvest, that's sanctified religion.
But if the local village cunning man uses some herbs and rhymes in secret to heal a sick cow.
Then that's dangerous magic. Even if the act itself looks pretty similar, the power structure is what defines it.
Exactly. The category itself is fluid. What we call alchemy in one century, a respected scholarly pursuit, becomes proto-science in the next, or dangerous occultism 100 years later.
The book just charts this fluidity over millennia. I mean, the scope is massive, from ancient shamanism to modern online communities.
And the unifying thread through all of it is that magic is humanity's persistent attempt to make sense of uncertainty.
Right, to exercise some kind of agency over forces that are just beyond our control, whether that's a disease or a drought or even a legal battle.
That desire to reach out and touch the unknowable, it just never goes away.
So to start that journey, let's talk about the difficulty of even defining magic. Davies really critiques those early evolutionary models.
You mean like James Frazer's idea
Yeah.
that magic was just a primitive stage humanity grew out of?
Yes. Davies says that's way too simple, too linear. The truth is much, much messier.
And you can see how integrated magic was if you look at the ancient world. In ancient Egypt, for example, the concept of heka, It wasn't some dark art.
No, it was divine power.
Yeah.
The energy of creation itself, used by priests, by pharaohs, it was part of the cosmic order.
But even in these high cultures, you start to see that tension emerge, that line between sanctioned ritual and illicit magic.
Look at the Greco-Roman world. They had their official state religion, right?
Mm.
Public prayers, sacrifices.
But then you also had these private, coercive practices.
We're talking about the famous curse tablets. The Romans called them defixions.
And just so we're clear, these weren't just like angry letters. They were usually little sheets of lead.
Right, with curses inscribed on them to force a specific outcome.
Like binding an enemy in court, or ruining a rival, or even fixing a chariot race.
And the key distinction here is that word, coercion.
Mm-hmm. The defixions were hidden. They were buried in graves or wells because they were trying to force a result, often by invoking spirits or demons.
It was outside the accepted social contract of prayer. And that attempt to coerce the divine order is what pushed it into that dangerous category of magic.
Okay, so as we move into the medieval and Renaissance periods, these magical impulses, they start to get systematized, more scholarly.
This is where you see the formal branches of the arts really emerge. Things like divination.
Reading the future through astrology or scrying.
And necromancy, communicating with the dead. Theurgy, which is invoking gods or angels. And of course, alchemy.
And alchemy is so often dismissed as just trying to turn lead into gold.
But it was this incredibly profound intellectual and spiritual pursuit.
The quest for the philosopher's stone, the elixir of life. It was about perfecting nature and perfecting the self.
A huge transformation that Davies details here is the rise of the grimoires, the magic books.
Before widespread literacy, a lot of magic was local oral tradition.
But texts like the Key of Solomon, they codified everything, the rituals, the invocations, all of it.
And this intellectualization elevated magic. It put practitioners like Agrippa of Nettesheim in the 16th century right alongside the great Renaissance thinkers.
They were occult philosophers seeking profound knowledge, and they were blurring the lines with what we would now call early science.
But there's a real paradox there, isn't there?
A huge one.
Huh.
Because the very act of writing it all down, which made it a scholarly discipline,
had a deadly consequence. A physical book, a grimoire that becomes concrete evidence, undeniable proof for the authorities that you're doing something forbidden.
It validates the scholar while making them a perfect target for a heresy charge.
Which brings us right to that period of control and persecution, especially in Christian Europe. The church had to draw a line.
To maintain its spiritual monopoly, yeah. And they did this by creating a crucial theological distinction.
Between natural magic and demonic magic.
Natural magic was mostly okay. It was dealt with the hidden virtues of nature healing herbs, planetary influences, that sort of thing.
It often shaded right into what we now call science.
But demonic magic?
Yeah.
That was the line you could not cross.
Right. That required a pact with the devil, the use of spirits, coercion through evil means. And once you define it that way,
you can systematically target it. This framework gave men like Heinrich Kramer, the author of the Malleus Maleficarum, the Hammer of Witches, the justification they needed.
The intellectual justification to just relentlessly pursue and prosecute witchcraft.
And Davies' powerful assertion here is that the witch trials were fundamentally about social control, about defining boundaries.
It wasn't really about fighting genuine evil.
No, they were tools. Tools to eliminate rivals, control women, enforce religious orthodoxy. The belief in magic was secondary to the social function of defining who was out.
Now, we're often taught that the Enlightenment, you know, the Age of Reason, just killed magic.
Yeah, that it just went away.
Davies completely rejects that simple story. Magic didn't vanish. It went underground. It survived in folk beliefs. And then it had this dramatic rebirth in the 19th century.
Which was sort of a romantic reaction against the cold industrial age.
Exactly. People were desperate for meaning, for spiritual depth. And this fueled the rise of secret societies like the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
And their focus was on this really complex, high ceremonial magic.
And this is where the focus really shifts. It becomes about individual transformation. You have figures like Aleister Crowley, who was key.
He didn't just practice rituals. He redefined magic, or magic, with a K in his spelling, as a psychological discipline.
To help the individual achieve their true will, it became internal, a kind of spiritual technology.
And that trend of institutionalizing it continues right into the 20th century, where it adapts again.
The best example is probably Gerald Gardner, who founded modern Wicca in the 1950s. He successfully codified magic and nature worship into a recognized, organized religion.
And crucially, Davies points out that magical thinking is all around us, even in totally secular contexts.
Right. Our modern desire for control is exploited by self-help gurus who promise you can manifest success just by thinking.
And advertising. Think about it. An ad for a car isn't just selling metal and plastic.
It's promising a transformation, freedom, power, a psychological outcome.
It taps right into that ancient craving for agency. And online culture is full of its spellcasting communities, viral chain letter superstitions.
Cyberpaganism. The impulse is immortal.
So moving on to the key themes, there are three messages that really jump out. First, this idea of the universality and psychological technology of magic.
This is my favorite part, I think. Davies argues that magical thinking is just embedded in how we think.
Because it fulfills these really deep, persistent human needs. Coping with uncertainty. Building confidence.
Creating meaning out of what feels like randomness.
And we all have our modern versions, our own little rituals. Maybe you wear a specific tie for every big meeting.
Or you have a lucky pen.
Yeah.
Or you think your whole week will be ruined if you don't stick to your exact morning routine.
These are psychological technologies. They boost our confidence, our sense of agency, and they are direct descendants of magical thinking.
The second big theme is magic as power and agency for the marginalized.
This is such a powerful analysis. Davies shows how magic often serves groups who are shut out from formal power structures, political or religious.
Think about traditions like hoodoo, created by enslaved peoples who were denied any kind of formal social power. Magic gave them an alternative source of authority.
Or think of Tuduba, the enslaved woman at the very start of the Salem witch trials. Her testimony, which was this mix of African, Caribbean, and European traditions, held undeniable power in that rigid Puritan world.
Magic can absolutely be a tool of resistance.
And finally, the book just keeps emphasizing the shifting triangle. The boundaries between science, religion, and magic are completely fluid.
The categories we use today are a product of history. They're not some eternal truth.
And the historical figures just bring this home so well. You take someone like John Dee.
A brilliant mathematician, advisor to Queen Elizabeth I.
And he also spent years meticulously trying to talk to angels through scrying, using advanced math to figure out the right time to do it.
For him, there was no contradiction. High mathematics, high ceremonial magic. They were just two different paths to the same goal, knowledge.
I think the book really excels at boiling these huge, complex ideas down into these really memorable concepts.
Yes, they're like little maxims for understanding the history of belief. The first one is, magic is not the opposite of science. It is the shadow that science casts.
That's so profound. It acknowledges that when science gives us a clear answer, like how gravity works, it can leave a symbolic or emotional void.
And magic steps into that void. It addresses the parts of human experience that pure rationalism can't really touch. It fills the gaps.
The second key idea is just as important for historical analysis. To understand magic, we must first understand that it has never been primarily about spells and potions, but about power and meaning.
It forces you to refocus your lens from how to why, from technique to function.
Right. If a community performs a rain ritual, the main function might be social. It brings everyone together, reinforces their shared values.
It gives them a structured way to cope with the anxiety of a potential famine. The social function is key, whether or not it actually makes it rain.
And finally, Davies insists, the story of magic in the age of science is not one of a simple decline into superstition, but a complex story of survival, adaptation, and reinvention.
Magic is resilient because our human need for meaning is resilient.
So how does all this sharp analysis actually help you in your daily life? I mean, it gives us practical insight.
The first tip, I think, is strengthening your critical thinking. When you realize that superstition, science, and religion are fluid social constructs,
you immediately become more critical of rigid boundaries. It allows for a much more nuanced view of different cultures.
And it drastically improves your ability to recognize modern magical thinking.
Yes. You can spot how advertising or politics exploits our primal desire for control, promising some transformation if you just buy their elixir or follow their ritual.
It helps you make more conscious choices about where you place your trust and your money.
And for anyone who loves pop culture, this knowledge just boosts your cultural literacy.
Totally. You get this historical grammar for decoding modern fantasy. When you see a secret society in a movie or the rules for spells in a game like D&D or Harry Potter,
you can trace that lineage right back to historical grimoires, the Golden Dawn, the ancient quest for the Philosopher's Stone.
For me, the lasting surprise was just realizing how many people we celebrate as pioneers of the scientific revolution. Newton, Kepler, John Dee were all deeply and enthusiastically involved in alchemy and astrology.
They just didn't see the hard lines that we assume were there.
Magic isn't some weird sidebar to the human story. It's absolutely central to how knowledge itself evolved.
So the book's ultimate profound thought, the one for you to carry forward, is this. Davies fundamentally challenges the idea that we live in a totally rational, disenchanted world.
Every single age finds new ways to enchant its reality, new ways to seek meaning and new technologies, whether they're secular or spiritual, to assert some agency. Recognizing that reveals so much about our culture right now. The desire to believe is unbroken. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our wild. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.